Okay, tonight we are on Deuteronomy 21, starting at verse 18, and we're going to go into chapter 22, the first 12 verses of chapter 22 as well. Quick review, like we normally do. This section of Deuteronomy is a lot of short passages with different topics in just a few verses. I mean, they have some really short sections. Like, we'll even have some one-verse teachings here. But there, all these short sections, sometimes people have a hard time connecting them and seeing how they're related, and they really do seem unrelated at some times. It seems like that anyway, but most commentators would agree there are connections between these things. And in Deuteronomy 21, so we're reviewing from last week, had five of those distinct topics. We covered the first three of those last week, atonement for unsolved murders. And that is, if we don't know who killed somebody, you find a body, how do the people atone for that? Well, it's the Lord who atones for them. They ask for atonement, and there's a ceremony that goes along with it. Secondly, marrying captive wives as Israel was going in to take the land of Canaan, the promised land. They would sometimes have cities where there would be wives to take captive, and they were allowed to marry those women. Thirdly, inheritance rights of the firstborn. This dealt with men who had two or more wives, which was common in the ancient world. And that was the main teaching here, is that when you have that situation and one wife is favored, or one is loved and the other one is not loved, if the one that is not loved has the oldest child, then that person, that son, does get the inheritance. So treating, God cares for all of these people that they are going in to conquer, for example, and also the unloved wife. God cares for wives who are unloved. So tonight we're going to finish up chapter 21, move into 22, and these short teachings will continue. So the last two from chapter 21 are these, and we're going to cover them. A rebellious son. It's only four verses. And second, a man hanged on a tree is cursed. Two verses. Those are both from the ESV. Those are the headings that come from the ESV. And so we'll just use those tonight. So notice they're short. Four verses, the first one. Two verses, the second one. And then in chapter 22, if you have an ESV Bible, the first 12 verses, it just says this for a heading: various laws. I think they could have done better than that, but they probably didn't want to have too many headings, because there are several distinct teachings there. There are at least six in those 12 verses. The Hebrew text has nine breaks in this place, which would indicate nine different sections of things to study. And as much as I don't like it, and since nine breaks in Hebrew, I can't get nine more things on the screen. And so I'm going to stick with the ESV's various laws as we get through there, and we'll start off. I'll break it down some as we get there, of course, but we're going to start it with what we're going to cover tonight. So first is a rebellious son. So we'll read through this like normal. Just this section, though, just these four verses, then we'll talk about those before moving on to the next section. So this is a rebellious son, and just be prepared to be shocked. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son, who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him, he will not listen to them. Then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gate of the place where he lives. And they shall say to the elders of his city, "This our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard." Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. And so you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear. So what's going on here? Well, let's go back to verse 18. Well, so what is this about? Well, really, it's a teaching about the fifth commandment. This is a teaching about honor your father and mother. So here's Deuteronomy 5:16. "Honor your father and mother as the Lord your God commanded you, that your days may be long, and that it may go well with you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you." So it's about that. It's about your days being long. It's about you living in the land for a long time. Honor your father and mother. So God has put an authority structure in place. And if you follow that authority structure, your days will be long. You live in the land a long time. So the opposite of that would likely be true. But notice this in the sentence here, the condition. "Though they discipline him." So God is big on honoring your father and your mother. Our society, we are not big on that, honoring father and mother. God is big on disciplining children, and we're not. So a question comes up then, was that your days may be long and that it may go well with you, a provision for Israel, or is that for us also? Does it just apply to Israel when they were going into the land of Canaan, or does it apply to us? Well, does this help? Ephesians 6, 1 to 4. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord." This is Paul writing to Gentile Christians. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, and that you may live long in the land." And then this, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." So years and years ago in this church, we weren't in this building. We were at 2020 South Norton. You know, I don't remember much of that, but I do remember this. I was in adult Sunday school class, and I think his name was Tim Royal. Does that sound right, Randy? Tim Royal was teaching, and he was teaching adult Sunday school class, and he was teaching from Colossians, and he came across this verse, a parallel verse to this one that we have right here in Ephesians 6. "Fathers, do not exasperate." That's the way the New American Standard read, and that's the version he read from. ESV translates it provoke. It's a different word than we have in Ephesians 6:4. Do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. I just remember him quoting that verse. I don't remember what he said about it, what he taught about that. But I do remember what I thought about it. At that time, we had little kids. I think Randall turns 36 this week coming up. We had little kids, so this was a long time ago, 2020 South Norton. And so what does it mean? What does this passage mean, this Colossians passage mean? Fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. Well, I took it to mean this, that if you over-discipline your kids, that they will lose heart. So don't do that. Is that what that means, do you think? That's what I thought. But how do you read this passage, the parallel passage? Let's just read through it. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So does this indicate that if you over-discipline your kids or over-instruct your kids, that they will become angry? Or does it actually teach the opposite? How do you read it? How do you read the but in that sentence? It's an emphatic but in the Greek text. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So how do we do that? How do you bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord? And I'm going to go right back here where I would normally go for this, because this is God giving us instructions on discipling our children, on instructing our children and disciplining our children. It's from Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. Start there. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. And you shall teach them diligently to your children, which means you shall repeat them over and over and over again to your children. And here's when you do that. When you talk with them, you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise, and you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. If we take that seriously, how can we over-instruct our kids? Can't be done. Can't be done. But by this sentence that we have in Ephesians, what happens if we don't do that? We're going to provoke our kids to anger. Don't provoke them to anger, but instead, do this. Back to our passage in Deuteronomy. Maybe. There we go. If a man has a stubborn or rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him, will not listen to them, then his father and mother shall take hold of him together and bring him out to the elders of his city. So both parents bring the son to the elders of the city. And they shall, in the place that he will live, and they shall say to the elders, this son is stubborn and rebellious, and he will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. So the case that they've laid out is that he's stubborn and rebellious, and he won't obey. And the being a glutton and a drunkard is probably just one of many examples of that. But that's the one that they provide for corroborating evidence for the elders. So this is a very public thing. Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear. So this was a public execution that was meant to help, to be good for the community. Getting rid of evil. The parents don't execute the sons themselves, and they don't even participate. Normally, a witness is the one to throw the first stone. The father and the mother aren't involved. Now, obviously, we don't have this in our society. We don't have this. Isn't going to happen here. And it seems, because of that, by the way, it seems that this is just awfully terribly severe, way too severe. How could this ever happen? How could that ever happen? How could I ever turn my son over to the elders of the city to have him stoned? Well, the Israelites were parents too. They had the same concerns that we would. In fact, most Jewish scholars would say, you know, this probably didn't ever actually get enforced. And maybe it wasn't even meant to, is what they said. The sentence probably didn't ever happen. We don't know that. But what was at stake here? I mean, we're thinking this punishment seems way too severe. The life of the son, right? The life of the son, but also the health of the community, the well-being of the community, the ability for Israel to live a long time in the land. The son is an evil on the community. So what impact do stubborn and rebellious sons who won't listen to instruction, what impact do they have on a community? And what do we know about most of those? Well, we know this, that most of them don't have dads at home. What impact does it have not having a dad at home? What impact does it have when we don't enforce our own laws? It creates stubborn and rebellious sons who will not obey. So this public execution in Israel was meant to have a positive impact on the community. So what else is at stake? Because we're talking about what does this mean to us? Well, there's something more ultimate at stake here with the son, isn't there? The son's very soul is at stake. And so I think that should make us think more about discipline and instruction, because it's his eternal soul that's at stake. So I better do this, right? I better do it right. I better do it the way that God says it to do it. right out of the pattern in Deuteronomy. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So we do receive discipline and instruction from the Lord ourselves because he loves us. And those who love children discipline them. Here's what it says in Proverbs 3, 11 and 12. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary of his proof. So don't get tired of the Lord disciplining you. For the Lord reproves him who he loves as a father, the son in whom he delights. On to the second one. A man hanged on a tree is cursed. We'll begin by just reading the two verses, verses 22 and 23. I've got them broken in a different place in the slide. And if a man has committed a crime punishable by death, and he is put to death, and you hang him on a tree, his body shall not remain all night on the tree, but you shall bury him the same day, for a hanged man is cursed by God. You shall not defile your land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance. So that's the whole section here. And it makes sense that it would follow that last instruction when they had somebody that they were supposed to put to death. So, but notice the three conditions here at the beginning. So you've got a man. He's committed a crime that's supposed to be punishable by death. You actually put him to death. And then thirdly, that you hang him on a tree. So there's no requirement anywhere that you hang somebody who you've executed on a tree. That's not there. It is, however, permitted. Right? And the purpose would have been to humiliate and also to warn others of this humiliation on purpose. So they would hang him, and other nations would leave people on hanging on poles for a long time in order that those corpses would be eaten by birds and wild animals. So they did that on purpose. In other places. But what does this mean? A hanged man is cursed by God. So what does that mean? So that there are two possibilities there. Daniel Block brings this one up, and once you say it, you say, okay, I get it. Is the person cursed because his body is hanged on a tree, or is he hanged on the tree because he's cursed? Block favors the second one. He's hanged on the tree because he is cursed. So you probably recognize these verses as quoted in the New Testament by Jesus, or referring to Jesus. Galatians, Paul writes this. It's 3:13 and 14, not 3:13 and 13, but Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us, for it is written, cursed is everyone who is hanged on a tree, so that in Christ Jesus the blessing of Abraham might come to the Gentiles, so that we might receive the promised spirit through faith. So notice how it starts off. Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law. What is the curse of the law? Well, a few verses earlier, Paul had said this. For all who rely on works of the law are under a curse. So if you're relying on works of the law, you're under a curse. For it is written, cursed be everyone who does not abide by all the things written in the book of the law and do them. So that's a quote from Deuteronomy. So he's quoting from Deuteronomy there and in both places. Christ came to be a curse for us so that we don't have the curse of relying on the law for our justification. That's the kind of the bigger thing that's going on in these verses around Galatians 3:13. Christ became a curse. Christ became cursed of God for us so that we don't have to have the curse of God hanging around our neck, basically, of trying to be justified by what we do. That's what it is about. So back to Deuteronomy. You shall not defile the land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance. That's what would happen if you would leave the guy out there hanging on the tree. Right? So you defiling that corpse, letting it being eaten by animals and birds, mammals and birds, would have defiled it. And so the body itself would, a dead body would defile you, right? You can't touch a dead body, but leaving it out is a curse on the land. So don't defile that by leaving the body out there. All right, we come to the section now in chapter 22. I don't know that this is possible, but so there are at least six teachings here that I've mentioned. So one of the things that we ask as we're going through this, do Christians need to keep these regulations? So you might have already asked that question. What am I supposed to do about this? Well, it's yesterday. It seems like a long time ago. It was just yesterday at our Greek and Hebrew reading group when we got to the Greek part that we were reading. We started off with Matthew 5:17. That was the very first verse that we read, Matthew 5:17. And here's what it says, starting in 5:17. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven, but whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. And as we were there, of course, it reminded me of why we study Deuteronomy. And it also reminded me of this, that in this next section we're talking about, Deuteronomy 22:1-12, Daniel Block asked that question. Do Christians need to keep these regulations? And he said, rather than asking whether or not we need to keep them, we should be asking, if we're paying attention to what I just read in Matthew 5:17, 18, 19, and we should be asking, how should we keep these regulations, not whether or not we should keep them. Block referred to that same passage. I remembered that as we read through that. So we'll start in the first section here with verses 1 through 4. And here we go. You shall not see your brother's ox or his sheep going astray and ignore them. You shall take them back to your brother. And if he does not live near you, and you do not know who he is, you shall bring it home to your house, and it shall stay with you until your brother seeks it. Then you shall restore him. And you shall do the same with his donkey, or with his garment, or with any lost thing that of your brother's, of which he loses and you find. You may not ignore it. You shall not see your brother's donkey or his ox fallen down by the way and ignore them. You shall help him to lift them up, again. So you could focus on a number of things in this passage. Is it about, you know, caring for animals? What is it about? Taking care of your brother's animals, is that what this is about? Or is it even broader than that? It's broader than that because it says, or anything lost of your brother. So New American Standard translate the word brother as countrymen. Israel would use the term brother for fellow Israelites as well. So this is really an application of you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So as we go through these four verses, just think about this, about loving your neighbor as yourself, and consider what kind of implications you should have from it. How you should live out these regulations. So, this word here, you shall not see your brother's ox or his sheep going astray and ignore them. That word means hide yourself. You shall not hide yourself. You shall not say, it's not my problem. You shouldn't say, I just mind my own business. I had a guy on the fire department when I was there, used to say this, not my monkeys, not my circus. I just mind my own business. So this morning, got to church this morning. And one of the things that happened, I was at my desk. Jerry Miller walked in. And he came in and he said this. Hey, somebody told me the back end of the compassion van was open a little bit. So we went out and checked it, closed it, right? As I was doing my other things, about half an hour later, Mary Lynn came up to me and said, hey, the door on the west side van is open. Why am I bringing that up? They didn't hide themselves. They didn't say, not my problem. Didn't say, I'm just going to mind my own business, put my head down and just go right ahead. You shall not see your brother's ox or your sheep going astray and ignore them. Hide yourself from them. You shall take them back to your brother. So the specifics probably don't apply to very many of us. I don't think we're going to run across an ox or a sheep. But we do know that there is property that belongs to other people that we run across. So just think about that. What if you lost something? What would you wish would happen? What would you hope would happen? Somebody'd find it and bring it back. That's what you're supposed to do. Do the same thing. Love your neighbor as yourself. And not only that, but notice where the initiative is. You don't just find it and say, I'll wait for him to ask for it. Take it to him. Take it right away. Don't make him worry that he lost something. But what if he lives too far away and you don't know who it is? Well, that's what this verse is for. And if he does not live near you and you do not know who he is, you shall bring it home to your house. And it shall stay with you until your brother seeks it. And then you shall restore it with him. So it wouldn't be on you. The animals were probably right in the house, by the way, here. So caring for the animals, or at least in some kind of an adjacent thing right next to the house. So if you lost something and you didn't know where you lost it, you might not even know when you lost it. You know, in this case, an animal can wander away. You know, you hear people talk about things wandering away. Oh, wandered away. What happened to it? Somebody stole it, probably. But maybe you lost something and drove away. Maybe you even lost one of your kids and drove away. What would you hope somebody would do? Take care of that child until you came back. So no matter what it is, anything that is your brother's, that's what we should do. And we just have such better ability to do that now. I mean, just think of little things like that I don't use. But Facebook, you can put out, hey, I found this. Come and claim it. Make the effort. And you shall do the same with his donkey or with his garment or with any lost thing that your brothers, which he loses and you find, he may not hide yourself from it. No finders keepers here. Don't hide yourself. What would you hope somebody would do for you? And you shall not see your brother's donkey or his ox fallen down by the way and ignore them. Hide yourself from them. You shall help him to lift them again. So in the Hebrew text, this is a separate instruction. There's a break there. But it's also about the same thing. It's about helping the animals, but it's really about loving your neighbor as yourself by helping with his possessions. So don't hide yourself. Don't mind your own business. Don't think it's somebody else's problem. See, we're still under this heading, and this next one is a one-verse instruction, verse 5. And then after this, you say if you think it's Deuteronomy speaks to our concerns of the day. A woman shall not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on woman's cloak. For whoever does these things, it is abomination to the Lord your God. So if you've been paying any attention, if you haven't been in a coma, you see the relevance of this point right here. The teaching is really very plain, isn't it? Women are not to dress like men, not to try to pretend to be men. Men are not to dress like women, not to pretend to be women. And in the modern world, we can take that to a deeper level of evil. Of abomination, because that's what it's called, abomination of the Lord, something the Lord detests. We can mutilate and drug our way into these things with people to pretend to be what we are not. So Albert Mohler often talks about things like creation order, and when he talks about this subject, he always talks about creation order. This is about creation order. It's about maintaining the way that God intended to do it. So you're probably, we might be a little bit optimistic, because I'm guessing everybody in here is in favor of Donald Trump's executive order that there are only two sexes. Everybody's probably in favor of that. So he did that with a stroke of a pen, by the way. That means the next president can undo it with the stroke of a pen. And so what are the real dangers, do you think, for Christians today, in churches today? What are the dangers? How does this kind of thing happen? Well, because it happens. Christians fall into traps regarding this, and the main reason they do is because they don't even know that this is in here. They don't know what Scripture says, or they don't care, which is probably even more likely than they don't know. But we can become desensitized to it. So a good example, and it's, I don't know how long ago it's been, but it's probably been a year ago or so that Mohler talked about this as well, that, 20 years ago was about the time, that would have been a year ago, so about 21 years ago now was about the first time that gay marriage was made legal in any state, about 20 years ago. Now the majority of people in this country think that that's a good thing. We can get desensitized to this. So another thing. So I was talking to a high school kid a while back, And just this topic came up. LGBTQ plus. And I just asked, so how many kids in high school are there who would say that they identify in one of those things? And the student said, about 100 in my school. About 100. That's Sioux Falls. About 100. How did that happen? The third way is that we can just become so, maybe we don't know, maybe we just don't care what God actually says here. A woman shall not wear a man's garment, or shall a man wear a woman's garment, for whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. So we just got back from our Mexico missions trip, and while we were on that trip, we read a book, and this is the book right here. It's got some good authors in it. It's got a variety of authors. It's called Finish the Mission, and when it says finish the mission, you can probably guess what it means. And Jesus came and said to them, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. So that the book was, I mean, John Piper wrote a chapter in this book. It's good. It's that, there's a bunch of things great in this book. And so I don't necessarily like doing this, but in one of the chapters when I read it, I went, that didn't really just say that, did it? Here's what it said. This is about taking the gospel to places where it hasn't been. In South America, there's been a phenomenal growth of church and passion for global missions. Brazilians are reaching their own, many of whom have not traditionally been the object of the church's love. I have a friend in Brazil who has an outreach to transvestites in his city. That's a good thing, right? That's a good thing. I'll admit that it's quite a non-traditional outreach. They actually hold beauty pageants to gather and connect with these transvestites, and the prize for the winner is a Bible. So, I just ask a question. Can you teach them to observe all that I have commanded you and hold a beauty pageant for transvestites? Can you do that? How are you teaching? I just about quit reading the book. I didn't. I'm glad I didn't quit reading the book, but it bothered me that much. And so we actually discussed that quite a bit among our mission team when we got to that chapter. Verses 6 and 7. If you come across a bird's nest in any tree or the ground with young ones or eggs and the mother sitting on the young or on the eggs, you shall not take the mother with the young. You shall let the mother go, but the young you may take for yourself, that it may go well with you and that you may live long. So possible reasons for this command is, one is just to avoid cruelty to animals. Don't kill them needlessly. That's one suggestion. Preserving the species. That's another, you know, it fits with the creation order idea. But notice this, you know, it doesn't say when you come across a mother sitting on the eggs or on the young, you can take either one. It says very specifically, you can't take the mother. So you can take the eggs, and you can take the little birds, but you can't take the mother. You must let her go. The mother can reproduce. There can be more eggs. So care for the parent-child relationship is another suggestion for what this means, regardless of whether it's animals or people. Things like we've already seen in Deuteronomy, you shall not boil a kid in its mother's milk. Coming up, in Leviticus, it said this. This is for sacrifices, by the way. When an ox or a sheep or a goat is born, it shall remain 7 days with its mother, and from the eighth day on, it shall be acceptable as a food offering to the Lord. Notice the relationship between the mother and the little one. And then this goes along. But you shall not kill an ox or a sheep and her young on the same day. Concern for that relationship. Maybe more than that is just the idea that as people we need to be humane. We need to think about creation order, how we're put in charge of creation, that God puts us in charge, and what we're supposed to do about it. It's interesting, you shall let the mother go. Just about everybody translates it that way. It's pretty emphatic, though, and one of the ways that it's suggested that you could translate is, you must surely chase the mother away. And if you see a mother guarding her nest, you can see why that's probably a better translation. Chase the mother away. And here's the purpose, that it may go well with you and that you will live long. And so we should be asking about these things. Well, how can we keep these regulations that it would go well with us? Verse 8 by itself. When you build a new house, you shall make a parapet for your roof, that you may not bring the guilt of blood upon your house if anyone should fall from it. So the roof was a place where people would gather, maybe sleep. Can you imagine getting up in the middle of the night and walking off the edge of a roof? But this is actually based on the commandment, you shall not murder. Because if you remember from other teaching about the you shall not murder, it included things like, don't negligently kill somebody. Don't have your axe head fly off and hit somebody. Don't use that axe, right? So, negligent. Don't be negligent in what you do. So everybody likes to complain about safety laws, especially about the fire department safety laws. Like, why do all these chairs have to be hooked together in the sanctuary? That's actually a law, by the way. It's to protect people in an emergency. If there are over 300 chairs, you have to hook them together. Don't block emergency exits. One of the such laws that are safety laws that have been put in place based on this, really, is if you have a deck outside and it's more than about 3 feet high, you have to have a railing around it. Same thing. That's the reason for it. That's about loving your neighbor as yourself. Verses 9 to 11, prohibiting mixing certain things. So this has ties to some of the teachings above. They all fit on one screen here, screenshot. You shall not sow your vineyard with two kinds of seed, lest the whole yield be forfeited. The crop that you have sown and the yield of the vineyard, you shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. You shall not wear cloth of wool and linen mixed together. So these things are all fairly similar to something that you find in Leviticus. And commentators really have a hard time figuring out why this is in place. What's the deal here? So Tigay, a Jewish scholar, says that, you know, I really don't know. I'm really not certain. Then he quotes a Jewish rabbi that says, these are sovereign decrees of God. for which no reason needs to be given. Well, that's not a bad idea to think about things sometimes. When God says it, we are to do it. Some think it's about saving creation order. We'll look at each of these verses real briefly and then make just a comment at the end. By the way, here, forfeited, the yield be forfeited is kind of an interesting choice of words to translate the Hebrew here. If you don't have an ESV, yours doesn't say forfeited here. It says something more like defiled, probably. It is the word that is normally translated to consecrate or to set apart. And I think in this case, the Jewish translation of the into English of the Old Testament is pretty helpful. Here's how it translates it. You shall not sow your vineyard with a second kind of seed, else the crop from the seed you have sown and the yield of the vineyard may not be used. Set apart, consecrated. It couldn't be used for common things. So that would explain the use of that word there. You can't use it for common purposes once it's consecrated or set apart. You shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Many reasons for that. One is that the ox would probably overpower and the donkey would be severely injured. Thirdly, you shall not wear cloth of wool and linen mixed together. So we do this all the time. I'm going to guess that everything that I have on is a mixture of, all the clothes that I have on are mixtures of different kinds of things. And notice this, it doesn't say you can't make cloth of wool and linen, it just says you can't wear them. So why would that be? Especially when you know this, and I know it because I read it, that if you mix linen and wool together, it will be stronger than either of them is by itself. So why not? It's probably as simple as this. That's what the priests wore. The priests were exempt from this. The priests wore this. And if you think about it, you can't use it for common use. It has something to do with that. So, like, you couldn't use the same incense that they were used in the temple. Forbidden from making it. So I think the unifying theme, though, can really be found in this verse. You shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together because of how it's used in the New Testament. Remember, 2 Corinthians 6:14. Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness, or what fellowship has light with darkness? So don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers. So Randy sometimes will say this, often says something like it. You know, when a New Testament author is quoting from a passage, part of a passage, he often has the whole passage in mind. So Paul might have all three of these. Paul probably would have all three of these things in mind. He would at least have them in his head. He knew this stuff. When he wrote, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. And it's really helpful if you think of something else that he quotes from Deuteronomy a little bit after this, where he says this, for it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain. So that's from Deuteronomy also. But how does Paul comment on that? Is it for oxen that God is concerned? When he says, don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers, is he really concerned about the oxen? Some concern, but he's really concerned about people being unequally yoked. So don't be unequally yoked. Don't be mixed with, don't be intertwined with unbelievers. You're God's people. You're separate people. You're to be different and holy devoted to him, not have mixed loyalties. Lastly, verse 12, and then we'll wrap it up. It'll go pretty quickly. You shall make for yourselves tassels on the four corners of the garment which you will cover yourself. So what is this about? So this is for everybody to do. This is for common people to do with your cloak, with your outer garment, that you're supposed to put tassels on it. And in Leviticus, it tells us, actually it's in Numbers, it tells us that this is to remind you. Here's what it's to remind you of. It shall be a tassel for you to look at and remember all the commandments of the Lord so as to do them and not follow after your own heart or your own eyes, after which you played the harlot, so that you may remember to do all my commandments and be holy to your God. So this, of course, is not right out of, but an extension of, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Put them on your wrists, put them on your forehead, do whatever you need to do. Put them on your doorposts, put them on your gates, do whatever you need to do to remember, to obey what he says. Do everything for that, to remember to obey. And it's what Jesus teaches, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you. So how should we do that? That's our question for each of us. How do we do these things? Let's pray. Father, we thank you for this instruction from you through your servant Moses. I pray that you would help us to see clearly, that you would give us eyes to see what is in there and how these things should shape us, shape our lives. Each day, pray this in Jesus' name, amen.